ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय भगिनीमहन्तुम् आरब्धम् खड्गा फानि कच्चै गृहीत। Kangsa was a condemned personality in the Bodra dynasty because he was envious and sinful. Therefore, upon hearing this omen from the sky, he caught hold of his sister's hair with his left hand and took up his sword with his right hand to sever her head from her body. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. Kangsa was driving the chariot and controlling the reins with his left hand, but as soon as he heard the omen that his sister's eighth child would kill him, he gave up the reins, caught hold of his sister's hair, and with his right hand took up a sword to kill her. Before, he had been so affectionate that he was acting as his sister's chariot driver. But as soon as he heard that his self-interest or his life was at risk, he forgot all affection for her and immediately became a great enemy. This is the nature of demons. No one should trust the demon despite any amount of affection. Aside from this, a king, politician, women cannot be trusted since they can do anything abominable for their personal interest. Chanakya Pandit therefore says, Vishvavo naiva kartavya strisu rajakuleshu cha. Tam jagupsita karmanam nirshamsam nirapatrapam vasudeva mahabhaga uvacha parisantyagam. Wanting to pacify Kamsa, who was so cruel and envious that he was shamelessly ready to kill his sister, the great soul Vasudev, who was to be the father of Krishna, spoke to him in the following words. Purport, Vasudev, who was to be the father of Krishna, is described here as Mahabhaga, a very upright and sober personality. Because although Kamsa was ready to kill Vasudeva's wife, Vasudeva remained sober and unagitated. In a peaceful attitude, Vasudeva began to address Kamsa by putting forth reasonable arguments. Vasudeva was a great personality because he knew how to pacify a cruel person and how to forgive even the bitterest enemy. One who is fortunate is never caught, even by tigers or snakes. Om Agyan Timirandasya Gyananjana Chalakaya Chakshurun Militam Jina Tasmoy Sri Guru Venu Vanchakalpataru Vyascha Kripasindu Vyayavacha Patitanam Bhavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nithananda Sri Advaita Gadadhara Shivashrivam Bhaktivinda. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Have the example of Kamsa, one who is dedicating his life to his own self-interest. One who is too much attached to his sense gratification. Such a person, according to Shastra, is declared to be an asura, or a demon. And one who cannot control his senses in this way cannot be trusted. Because their so-called affection, their so-called love, is only an expression of their own lust and greed. whatever will best serve the purpose to gratify their senses, they are like that. But if one, even one's own beloved, becomes an obstacle to one's sense gratification, such a person becomes your enemy. And we see that this world, most people are of this classification. Even within a family, the parents, they love their child so much, so-called love, giving them all affection, giving them gifts, giving them so much of their lives. But of course, why is that? Generally, it is for their own selfish interest, because they consider the child to be their own. The child has their name. The child has their physical appearance. The child is mine. This child is my property. I am the controller of this child. And as long as the child is giving me the sense gratification that I want, which means the object by which I could repose my natural propensity of affection, then I show all sorts of affection to the child. But if the child betrays me, the child is not under my control, if the child isn't the way I want the child to be, then in the society we find parents often, they can show no affection to their child. They reject their child. To an extreme case, this was the sense of Hiranyakashipu. How affectionate he was to Prahlad. It describes in the Bhagavatam that when Prahlad would sit on his lap, his father's eyes would be filled with tears. I mean, his parental affection was deep. His eyes would fill with tears. He would smell the top of his head. He would rub him. He would embrace him. When Prahlad was doing well in school, his father's heart was just upsurged with a feeling of gratification and pride. But as soon as he found that Prahlad was not like him, was out of his control, was acting contrary to his sense gratification, his prestige. Could you imagine what that would do to Hiranyakashipu's prestige within his society of Rakshasas? Now here he is, putting himself on the platform of the controller of the universe, and his own son is a devotee. It's terrible. So therefore, all that affection, which was meant really not for Prahlad, but for his own sense enjoyment in the first place. He was just an object to give him sense enjoyment. That was what he was affectionate toward, his sense enjoyment. He was ready to kill him. What to speak of friends? Here we have the example of Kamsa. And why does the Sastra bring these things out? Why does Krishna arrange it in this way? How affectionate relatives become enemies when you don't fulfill their sense enjoyment. This is the extreme intensity of the demoniac condition of the world. Kamsa's own sister. He was actually cousin brother. But in those days, there was no difference between a brother and a cousin brother in affection and in closeness. Of relationship. Kamsa was the brother, the elder brother of Devaki. And how much affection and love he had for her. She was so beautiful. He was so proud of her. She was giving him all types of sense gratification. She's a family member. That means she's an object by which I could have sense gratification by showing affection toward and loving. And he was so affectionate toward her that he volunteered to be her chauffeur. Although he was in a very royal position as a prince. He said, "Oh, my dear sister, you are getting married. This is a happy, wonderful, joyous occasion." Kamsa took part in the wedding ceremony and rejoiced and celebrated and was so happy for his sister.
Really, was he happy for his sister? He was happy for himself. He got to go to a nice party, and because it was his on the basis of his sister's wedding, he was very happy, very affectionate to her. More prestige was coming into the family because she was marrying Vasudev. He was very happy, very proud. So out of sheer affection, he volunteered, "Let me drive you and your husband to your husband's village, his kingdom." And he said it with such brotherly affection that Vasudeva and Devaki could not refuse. "Yes, of course, such an honor that you will drive us, such a great, powerful person as yourself." And in this way he was driving, and as they were driving, we could imagine how his heart was filled with so much happiness. "My sister, how I love her." And then this voice came from the sky, "But Kamsa, you know, the eighth son of this sister is going to kill you." And as soon as Kamsa saw that Devaki was no longer an object of sense enjoyment for him, but a threat to his sense enjoyment, he became her worst enemy. With his left hand, he grabbed her by the hair, and with the right hand, he took a sword, and he was ready to sever her head from her trunk. His own sister. Then after coming to power, his own father he put in prison. Love is cheap in this material world. This is the nature of demoniac atmosphere, especially in this age of Kali, that people are so attached to their senses that you cannot trust them. So-called friends in this world, even disciples. You don't know who loves you until there's a crisis in your life. Then those people who stand by your side and willing to take the risks along with you, you know that those people are not demons. Those people are actual devotees. Those people are at least innocent. So the main principle, as explained in this purport, is that a person who cannot control his senses or her senses is not to be trusted. Srila Prabhupada used to say the whole world is trying to cheat each other. It is the world of the cheaters and the cheated. That's all. In the name of love and affection, it is simply mutual exploitation. But if you can just have faith that your guru is not trying to cheat you, then the road back to Godhead will become very simple and very clear. Because the devotees of the Lord, they are meant to be God's representatives in this world. And the only way they could really represent God is they must be in a position to earn the trust of the people in general. Because without trust, the message of Godhead cannot really penetrate a person's heart. We could preach in so many ways, and we can entertain people's intelligence and give some gratification to their brains by speaking nice philosophy and convincing words and telling nice stories. But a person will not really accept what you're saying within their hearts until they trust you. It's all mental. And therefore, the first principle a preacher must really strive for is to somehow or other earn the trust of the people. Then whatever you say, they will accept it. They will hear with open ears, open mind, open heart, not for their entertainment, but for their purification. After all, anybody could just sit and listen to nice narrations and enjoy. But that doesn't mean it's going to change their heart. They're not necessarily even accepting what you're saying is true. It just sounds nice. It's a more pious form of entertainment. Rather than turn on the television or go to the cinema, we go to the pravachan and enjoy. It's a pious way of entertainment. That is nice. It is a step in the right direction. But until you learn to trust the person you're hearing from and trust the message that they're speaking, it's going to have minimal effect. Therefore, love and trust is the basis of this Krishna consciousness movement. Srila Prabhupada always said, the fiber of the sustenance of this movement are these two ideas, love and trust. Without trust, there can be no love. And without love, there cannot be Krishna consciousness. So therefore, it is our great, great aspiration, we should be thinking like this, that we have to learn to be trustworthy disciples, trustworthy God brothers, God sisters. We have to develop first a sense of love and trust amongst each other, and then we will create this foundation by which other people can come, and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's movement of love of God can grow. But in order for there to be such love and trust, it is explaining here, we first must learn how to control our senses. Because as long as we cannot control our senses, we are not a servant of God, we are Godas. There is Krishna Das and there is Godas. If you are Godas, you will just do whatever is needful to protect your sense enjoyment in this world. A friend in need is a friend indeed. And of course here Kamsa, he is displaying the inclination that is within all of us. We all have this Kamsa propensity within us, that I am number one, my interest is first. As they say in English, first we have to take care of number one, that means me. Everything else comes later. Not how can I serve, how can I enjoy. And some people even come to serve for their own enjoyment. But the test is when that service creates a risk, creates a danger, is something you hate to do. Then if you do it anyway, then you understand that you're a servant in truth. But if you don't, you can understand you've never really been a servant. You've always simply wanted to enjoy. And doing the service is just part of your enjoyment in life. If you like, anybody could do what they like. It doesn't take a loving, trusting person to do what they like. But when somebody's willing to take risk, make sacrifice, and do things that they hate to do, then you understand that that person is in the mood of service. And Krishna tests everyone. And how much he tested Kamsa. And how Kamsa terribly failed the test. And the amazing thing is that even though Kamsa became such an asura, not only did he kill the first six children of Devaki, but he was killing all the babies born throughout the whole kingdom. He was killing thousands and thousands of little babies on his order. Why? To protect his own sense enjoyment to such an extreme. There are people like this today. There are huge wars taking place simply because some man has an ego problem and he wants to satisfy his ego. It doesn't matter how many millions of people are killed if it gives him a special sense of prestige, power, and control. This has been going on since time immemorial. And in the long run, the eighth son of Devaki killed Kamsa. All this terrible karma he accumulated, and he couldn't even avoid his destiny. So similarly, people do all crazy things, become enemies of those who they're supposed to love, and thus commit great offenses to others just to maintain their own sense enjoyment, but they can't even do it. In due course of time, it's all taken away anyway. Just like Hiranyakashipu, how much he wanted to kill Prahlad. If he just accepted Prahlad as a devotee and loved him for what he was, even though it was an embarrassment for him, it wouldn't have been so bad. Actually, he would have made such wonderful spiritual advancement by doing so. But ultimately, although he hated Prahlad and he was trying to kill him in so many ways, in the process he was totally miserable. And in the end he was murdered by the Lord himself. Just Krishna's mercy upon him, causeless mercy. So similarly, Kamsa, he's trying to find sense gratification, he's trying to have happiness, security, and peace of mind in his life, and to protect that, he wants to kill all the children. And through the whole process, he was in total anxiety. This is the materialistic way of life. People do insane things for peace, and in the process, there's no peace. People turn against the people they love because they want a sense of ego gratification for happiness, but through the whole process, they're totally miserable and frustrated. It's insanity, this material world. For a little happiness, what a person's willing to do, atrocious, sinful karma, and they don't even get happiness during the process and in the end. It's just a great illusion. And we all have this tendency. We all have this demon of Kamsa somewhere in our own minds until we become very, very purified souls. So we must be very careful. We must be very careful to not act for our own self-interest, but to act for the pleasure of Krishna. To actually capture the real spirit of service. And that real spirit of service is captured to the extent we are willing to put ourselves second. And when Krishna so mercifully and kindly puts a test before us, that to be servant means to be ridiculed, to suffer, to lose fame and name in society. If we're not willing to do that, then we could understand we've never really been a servant of Krishna. We've simply been a servant of our own ego and senses. But when those tests come, and we gladly and willingly accept, yes, Krishna, for you, yes, Guru Maharaj, for you, anything, then we understand that what is Krishna consciousness. Is there any questions? You should deal with everybody, but as far as your own personal commitments to the really and truly valuable things in your life, you should only entrust that, which really means your heart, to those who are self-controlled and to those who are humble devotees of the Lord. And you should simply be aware that if you are investing Krishna's energy in any way, shape, or form, which is sometimes required through these agencies of people who cannot control their senses, you have to be very aware and cautious. In that way, you don't really trust them. If you're cautious and aware with someone that you trust, you're not cautious and aware with, right? You simply give yourself, unhesitatingly, correct? But with such people, we have to be very cautious and aware. And Vasudeva was like that. Vasudeva had to deal with Kamsa. He had to preach to him. And after Kamsa preached to him, after Vasudeva preached to Kamsa, Kamsa said, "All right, I will not kill. Just bring me the first child." And Vasudeva was such a trusting person, he brought him. He didn't have to, he could have hit him. He brought him. And Kamsa was so thinking, "Oh, this man is accepting my authority so wonderfully." It was, again, his sense enjoyment. He's such an honorable person. He takes my word so seriously that he's brought his own child. And he said, "Vasudev, take the child back. I don't have to worry about this one. It's the eighth one I'm worried about." And what was Vasudev thinking when he left? He was thinking, "I don't trust him. I have to deal with him. There's no alternative, but I do not trust him. Because he cannot control his senses. He could change his mind at any time and turn against me," which he did. So we have to deal with the people in this world the same way that Vasudeva is dealing with Kamsa. You have to show them a sense of trust, but in your heart, your trust is for God and his devotees. And therefore you deal with such persons with great caution, great care, knowing that at any moment they can cheat you. Yes, Shamananda? Can you speak louder, please? How do we know? When it doesn't give us pleasure and we do it anyway, because it is the order of Guru, then we know that we're doing it for Krishna. That's when we know. If you do it as a regulation and you're not doing it on the whims of your own mind and senses, then you can understand that you're really in an attitude of servant. And when things get difficult and there's a lot at stake and you continue, then you understand, yes, Krishna's putting me in this situation just so that I could reveal to him that I really do want to be his servant. So welcome the texts, the tests and the hardships that come in your spiritual life, because they are what separate the sincere from the insincere. Those tests make the sincere more sincere and the insincere less sincere. But the ego is this—is a sense. There are five senses which include the mind. Six senses. Krishna says the five senses and the mind, the sixth sense. So the ego that is a servant of the mind, or the mind that is a servant of the false ego, is also a type of sense gratification. Profit, adoration, and distinction are subtle sense gratification. Correct? And what is profit, adoration, and distinction? It's all just the ego, the false ego. Correct? There are people who can very staunchly control their gross senses, but they're not humble. Therefore, they're really just serving their false ego. They're just serving their subtle forms of sense gratification. Hiranyakashipu, for 100 celestial years, he was really controlling his senses. He didn't eat, he didn't drink, he didn't sleep. He was standing with his arms raised to the sky on his toes. He didn't even breathe. Huh? Can you control your senses like that? 100 celestial years with no food, no sleep, and no eating. He was also celibate for that whole 100 celestial years. Total celibacy. He was controlling his senses like anything. But for what? Was he doing it as a humble service to God? He was doing it simply for his ego. So we are not concerned with that type of sense control. That is just a greater form of sense gratification. Giving up a little to get a lot. Huh? Any other questions? Yes.
I can't understand this particular thing. This material world, you see many people, all of us, we get so much, material from this material passion. Whatever we go for it, for any material enjoyment, we work hard, and so just for 2-3 years of material enjoyment, and we don't get it also. And although we didn't got it, material enjoyment, yet again we try it, On that basis, we spend our whole life. But we don't get that realization that whole life I've spent, but I did not get that realization. And this I've seen almost all the people. Why is it so that so much they have experienced themselves, getting so much shortness that they have not got that material pleasure, yet they are working hard and hard and hard again, thinking that I will get it next time. Why they are not getting that experience to get that there is nothing in this world? Why they are not getting that experience? What is that?
This is the power of Maya, Krishna's deluding energy. Although it's so obvious to a devotee, they're just so much under the spell of Maya that they cannot see their situation. It is because they're just so attached to their sense enjoyment, they're not willing. When you become attached to sense enjoyment, you become simply under this intoxicating spell of Maya. And even if something is right before your eyes, you don't want to see it. You can't see it. This is the power of the deluding potency. Therefore, in the Bhagavatam and in the scriptures, we find devotees, how they're just struck with wonder to see the deluding potency of Maya. How people are just acting so crazy, and it's so obvious, the foolishness, but they can't see it. This is the greatness of Krishna. When you see this, you should just think, Krishna, my God, your external energy is so powerful. How powerful you must be. Keep people so totally befooled. This is the greatness and the glory of Krishna in the form of the deluding potency of Maya. It's like a prison, but in this prison there's no bars, there's no guards. The bars are that we don't want to leave it. Even though we're being kicked and kicked and kicked, we just don't want to leave it. It's just like if you see an ass and when they want an ass to just pull heavy loads, they tie the carrot on a stick in front of him, right? And he's just going after the carrot. But he never reaches the carrot. To the ass, he's working like an ass all day long because he wants to get that carrot. Although every day, he never gets it. Huh? Now a person who's just standing on the side just looks at it and laughs and says, it's ridiculous. Every day he's doing, doesn't he see that he never gets it? He can't get it. It's impossible. He'll never get it. It's on a stick. Every time he walks, it goes one step ahead of him. Huh? We look at it and we just see total foolishness. Because we're detached. Because we're detached, we can see the ignorance of it. But because the ass is attached, he can't see his own predicament. As long as you're attached, you cannot see the utterly humiliating condition you are in this material world. How foolish, striving for something that's never attained. But if you're detached, you can just look at the whole world and see it for what it is. And on one hand, you just laugh, and on another hand, you cry. You laugh that people are so foolish. It's so obvious, and you cry that they're suffering so much because of it. But you see, the amazing thing is we have seen so many devotees who can obviously see this. It's so logical, so right before our eyes. But as soon as that devotee becomes attached, he falls into the same syndrome. Huh? And we can't, it's just inconceivable. This person could see it as it is, could preach it, could explain it as it is, as long as he's detached. But as soon as he becomes too much attached, as soon as he allows Maya to set that attachment in his heart, he just becomes a whole part of it. He loses his intelligence. Hmm? Everything he was preaching, everything he was saying, now it's totally covered over. Hmm? That is why Prabhupada said in Krishna consciousness, it's like a razor's edge. If we're not very, very cautious, very careful, we can become attached. As soon as there's too much attachment, there's blood. Maya just steals away our intelligence. Huh? How to remain detached? By always keeping our senses and our mind engaged in the service of our spiritual master, the Vaishnavas, Krishna. That way we'll always be protected. The mind and senses need activity. They need pleasure. Keep it with Krishna. And perform austerity for Krishna. That will keep you detached. Hmm? Even in the Bhagavatam, even Lord Brahma, when he became attached to his own daughter in the wrong way, he totally lost his intelligence. Even his own disciples and the sages, they were looking at him and he was chasing. Huh? That's the power of the deluding potency. Therefore, we should just be very humble and pray for the shelter of our Guru and Krishna. Hare Krishna.